Welcome, everybody, to Post Game Takeaways presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tyler James. He's the one and only Eric Hansen. We're coming to you from our respective homes to share our post game takeaways from Notre Dame's underwhelming victory over Boston College on Saturday. But first, let me share a word from our friends at Academy Sports and Outdoors. The most festive gear of the year is back at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Don't miss the limited edition Magellan Outdoor Christmas Market Collection only at Academy. Get exclusive 2025 gear and gifts for all your holiday parties, fun family photos, and Christmas morning traditions. Check out the entire collection from matching PJs and holiday print fishing shirts and dresses to exclusive new Mossy Oak Snowdrift camo styles and more. Shop in-store or at academy.com. Need it fast? Get same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. Let your holiday fun begin with the Magellan Outdoors Christmas Market Collection only at Academy. Eric, this one didn't end up being the blowout many of us expected it to be. What was your biggest takeaway from the Irish win?
My biggest takeaway is that on a day where it really could have crumbled for Notre Dame, and on a day where some teams ahead of them in the rankings did crumble, CJ Carr really played well and played very poised. And I think that is something that bodes well, both with how the committee's going to evaluate Notre Dame and also that they can make this a hiccup and not the start of something kind of icky for November. But I mean, there were a lot of takeaways that were scary, that were very Halloween-like, but that one overshadowed some of the bad stuff. How about you? What was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, I'll touch on Carr first. I think it was definitely nice to see him rebound from a bit of a slow start for him specifically. They were very pass heavy coming out of the gate against Boston College and punted on the first possession and then failed on a fourth down attempt on the second possession. And so he had some reasons to maybe not be as confident as he progressed through the game, but that did not happen. I think when you show the trust in him to sort of stretch the field and take those deep shots, Notre Dame kept going for it. And then when he's able to connect with Malachi Fields and Will Pauling, you sort of understand why Notre Dame is so willing to do that. And Boston College's defensive game plan dictated a lot of that too, with the way Boston College really zeroed in on Notre Dame's running game. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway too, was the way CJ Carr responded. But the thing that was just a bit troubling to me was Notre Dame's defensive inability to get off the field. I know they only gave up 10 points to Boston College, and all told, I think you can be pretty proud of the performance defensively. But it's a bit surprising how many third downs and fourth downs that Notre Dame let Boston College convert. And I don't know that that's necessarily something that will carry over, but it's something that Notre Dame can't allow to happen, especially next week, I would think, against a Navy team.
Yeah, and they were, I guess all penalties are preventable, but they were not, Marcus used the term aggressive penalties. Like sometimes you get a pass interference and you're just really trying to fight for the ball and so forth. You're not being sloppy. You know, I don't know, Kingston Viliamu Asa's unsportsmanlike conduct, which Notre Dame would have been getting off the field, then gave Boston College a first down. I'm still not sure that I understand why he got a penalty there. And then Josh Burnham's penalty for face mask wasn't a face mask, and that wasn't good. But there was Jalen Snead's shove out of bounds, which I think it either would have been fourth and long or would have been a punt there. And the defensive delay of game, which is, you know, mimicking signals or trying to get the other team to jump illegally. Yeah, there was just too much of that stuff. I mean, there was some good stuff with the defense. Grayson James started out 16 of 18. His last 28 passes, he was 9 of 19. His last 19 passes was 9 of 19 with two interceptions. So they adjusted there. 12 rushing yards, 0.4 per carry. The longest run was 5 yards. And yet, as you pointed out, a lot of third and one and fourth and ones were converted. And on running plays. So that was a little bit troubling. And the special teams was a disaster. I mean, I was in charge of the grade card. So Marie Biafori from Atlanta will be proud of me that I was giving out grades. I did give an F for special teams.
Yeah, and we talked a bit about the kicking game in our post-game show with Mike Singer earlier. I know you've been in favor of giving Eric Schmidt some chances. What, like, did you think – okay, did you agree?
Why do I base that on that?
I guess, yes. And, like, then if that's the case, how long do you shelve Burnett? Like, when is it time for him to come back? And do we – like, was one missed extra point in this game worthy of benching him for the rest of the game?
I think it really depends, Tyler, on, and Marcus kind of alluded in the post-game press conference that maybe he wasn't right physically. And I think that's where I have issues. If it's just been intermittent so much of the season and you can't count on whether he's going to be healthy or not. They don't seem to really know what the problem is and have a bead on how to treat this for the long term. Why not let him get completely healthy, and then you can make that choice later. I think what they've done in kind of behind the scenes is decide who's better between Eric Schmidt and Marcello Diomede. And there was times where they kind of went back and forth and they finally said, you know what, Eric is the better option here. I think they have to live a little bit with his growing pains so that they have two really clear options if Noah Burnett doesn't come back. And you start to get into games where, like, a 50-yard field goal will win or lose a game for you. And if you, I mean, Eric Schmidt has the distance to kick it. Does he have the confidence yet? Maybe not. Does he have the consistency? He definitely doesn't. But he is the one guy that did make a kick today. And I think if you're going to go out and get the number one kicker in the country, let's invest in him. And see if, especially in games where you're favored a lot, and see if you can't get him right and moving in the right direction. If Noah Burnett is healthy, that's why you picked him out of the portal. I'm just not convinced that he's healthy for the long run yet. Once Mitch Jeter got healthy last year, he was great. But when he was kind of half in, half out, he wasn't very good. And he was the best Notre Dame had. They have alternatives. That's why I'm advocating for Eric Schmidt. And it does feel like, because his name is Eric, I'm doing that. But I'm doing it based on his pedigree. And again, this is not a guy that just, you know, that you plucked off of the soccer team. And I know a lot of people want to do that and pick somebody from there. But, I mean, this was the guy that was supposedly the number one kicker in the country, high school kicker in the country. And I think there was a reason for that. And I think you need to develop that.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. Like, once you go to Schmidt and he misses, you got to stick with Schmidt. Like, don't go to your third kicker. Like, it's not solving the problem. You need to give Schmidt more opportunities. I'm just totally confused about how much Burnett is hurt. If he's right. Hurt, does Notre Dame know when and if he's hurt? Is it an excuse when he misses that he's hurt? Like, I just don't know. It feels so. And you feel bad because it's like, if the guy's hurt, he deserves the ability to rest. But if they're presenting it as if he's not even hurt, like, he wasn't even on the injury report this week. So I don't.
Which is a little bit squirrely sometimes, isn't it? Not just
right. Christian Gray wasn't, right? Was he on the injury report at all? Until today, all of a sudden he's questionable and then he's out. So I guess we should just stop trusting that in general. But one maybe smaller concern, but I'm curious if maybe it's a greater concern. What's your level of concern? It's definitely a smaller concern than the kicking game, but in the grand scheme of things, your level of concern with the Jadarian Price fumbles. What are your thoughts on his repeated fumble issues this season?
He had a real, I mean, it wasn't just the fumble today too. I mean, 12 yards on 9 carries. I think his long was 5. And I realized Boston College was really investing a lot in stopping the run, but they haven't done that against anybody else except for Fordham this year. So that was, I do think I'm concerned about it. I think Marcus Freeman in the post game had a good comment about it. He's earned some trust and equity from the other things he's done. But yeah, boy, whew. That's something that's really got to be addressed. And you wonder, I mean, is it just physical or is there some mental thing there? I remember when Jonas Gray went through kind of a mental part with his fumbles, and they had to get him right and eventually did. So, I mean, Jadarian Price is good enough to invest that time and care with, but it is, I mean, that's three, and it seems to be kind of in the same part of the field a lot of times. So,
yeah,
right. All three kind of in the red zone. Okay.
Yeah. I think inside the 5 yard line, maybe even like they're goal to go situations. Maybe not every time it's goal to go, depending on where the first down marker is, but like we're talking about Notre Dame getting in close, and maybe there's something to that. Maybe for some reason he is straining more in trying to get extra yards closer to the goal line, and that is causing the issue. I think it would behoove Notre Dame to find confidence in maybe a third running back in those situations if this is going to be something you're worried about. I think Price is going to continue to have his role in the offense and his allotment of carries. I don't necessarily think that this will prevent that, but it does make me wonder, is like, well, maybe just stop giving him carries on the goal line. Maybe that solves the issue. Yeah. I don't know. It's probably simplifying it too much, but I mean, it can't hurt, right? I mean, it's not like Notre Dame is bereft of talent at the running back position beyond Jadarian Price.
I like that idea, actually. And just doing my freshman intel piece, I don't know, it was about 10 days ago. Nolan James Jr.'s name popped up, mm-hmm. and they did look at him as a third down option. He's that good on third down, and he's a decent sized back. We didn't even see him today. I thought, you know, if it gets to be what I predicted right. for to be, which was 51-6, we would have seen him. But they did talk about that. That was discussed before the season started, maybe making him the third down option. And maybe that's something, you know, goal line only, you know, putting there. Because the one thing about Nolan James Jr. too is you're not telegraphing what you're doing there. He's also a really good receiver that you can count on and that they trust. He's a guy that possibly could be the number one back next year. So I think that's going to be interesting if they revisit that discussion.
Well, we'll see what happens there. What do you think of the way the sort of the defensive front seven played? I mean, the whole defense played well in terms of secondary getting turnovers, but I thought the front seven with the tackles for loss and the sacks were pretty impressive.
It was really impressive. Five sacks, and, you know, Dylan Lonergan was a little bit easier of a target there. He didn't play as much. Grayson James had decent mobility and they got to him. They had five sacks. They also had nine quarterback hurries, which is a huge number. And it's also very inconsistent how that's tracked from game to game sometimes. But I mean, that anybody picked nine, maybe they like the meatballs in the press box or something. And they nine, yeah, let's give them nine. But
well, they weren't biased. There were a lot BC of tackles.
What's that?
They weren't biased because BC only had two of their own quarterback hurries in terms of their defenders. So unless they're biased in Notre Dame's favor, sorry.
There you go. And then 12 tackles for loss. Now, sacks are part of tackles for loss, but Notre Dame's been one of the worst teams in the country in tackles for loss all year. They've jumped up there with their sacks, but in terms of tackles for loss on running plays, they didn't have a lot coming into this game, and they had a bunch. So Drake Bowen, career high 14 tackles. Kingston Viliamu Asa, career high 9 tackles. There was some really good play in the front, and they need it because they're going against the number one rushing offense next week.
Yeah, I did my column for our Blue and Gold Illustrated magazine about the linebackers impacting the pass rush, and they made me look pretty smart this game with 3.5 sacks between Bowa and Viliamuasa and Sneed. So I think the way that those guys have come on and impacted the pass rush has been impressive, and I think something that is here to stay. And I think Notre Dame can do that more because they continue to have faith in the secondary. Certainly BC was picking up some chunk yardage from time to time in the passing game, but the secondary came up with some big plays, particularly the interceptions. Tate Johnson had the one early, then Adon Schuler had the one that I think really shifted the game early in the fourth quarter with BC driving into the red zone, and then Johnson gets his second one late. What do you make of this Notre Dame secondary, and where does Notre Dame go from here? Obviously, maybe not the most important aspect of the game next week against Navy, but what do you think of what's going on in the secondary?
Well, Grayson James was living up around 200 pass efficiency for a lot of the game. They knocked it down to 120 by the end of the game, and Dylan Lonergan's wasn't very good. So they'll probably stay about where they were in the national pass efficiency, right around that 40 mark. I'd love to see what this secondary looks like when all the pieces are with it. When Devontae Smith plays a full game, or as much as he's going to play in a game, the Christian Gray's healthy, Leonard Moore's healthy, Dallas Golden is filling in. I love Luke Talich being the third safety. I think he did some big things today. I think Tay Johnson becoming a starter was a turning point for the secondary. I think there's more out there for them, but they certainly have a penchant for big plays. What's your take on the secondary?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little bit feast or famine in terms of the interceptions and then giving up some tough plays. I think they've done a nice job for a consistent amount of time now in terms of the big plays that Notre Dame secondary has given up. That was the biggest issue early on in the season. I think they're much more sound there. There may be some ways to exploit Notre Dame's secondary, whether it's in zone or man, in certain situations that a team like Boston College was able to take advantage of. And for as bad as Boston College has been, they've been able to get yards in through the passing game. And so that's not like that was a new recipe for them.
Right.
And they've been bad at running the ball, which proved to be the case again against Notre Dame. But whether or not it's been Dylan Lonergan or Grayson James, they can pick up yards, and they got one of the receivers back tonight in Jaden Skeet, who impacted the game positively for Boston College. So yeah, I think the secondary still, like you said, without Christian Gray, it's always been something with the secondary in terms of someone being out and not being available. So it doesn't feel like we've seen the final product yet. And even though I joked about maybe it's not that most important against Navy, Navy will throw the ball and try to do it when you're not expecting it. So that'll be important for those guys to be focused and locked in against Navy next week. We'll talk plenty more about the midshipmen in our shows coming up in the coming week. But before we wrap up tonight, I know we want to talk a little bit about what happened elsewhere in college football today and how that impacts Notre Dame. What do you think of the way this weekend sort of played out for the Irish and the college football playoff possibilities?
Yeah, it's interesting because because I'm an AP voter, they'll ask me, well, if Notre Dame only wins by this much, do you drop them? And you can't answer that question without knowing what everybody else does.
Right. Yeah.
Last week, Virginia had a overtime victory over North Carolina, and I thought, I'm not really eager about moving them up. And there were so many teams just ahead of Virginia that lost, you couldn't not move them up. And I think that's kind of what happened to Notre Dame. Now, I had Notre Dame higher than what the poll does, but AP had them 12th, and three teams just above them lost. Miami was tied for 10th. They lost to SMU in overtime. Georgia Tech, who was 8th, lost to NC State. And Vanderbilt lost to Texas on the road. They were way down. They came way back and almost overtook Texas, but it was a 34-31 loss. So that's three teams that'll drop behind Notre Dame. And then a team that could have challenged them and jumped them with a win over Oklahoma. Tennessee lost at home to Oklahoma, so that's going to take Tennessee out. That was probably an elimination game for Tennessee, or really, really difficult. So Notre Dame might end up moving up. I would think that they will. I don't know how much, because there's not a lot of great candidates behind them with great wins today. And as we're recording this, Cincinnati, who's behind them, was in trouble at Utah. And so that would preclude somebody like Cincinnati from jumping them. So, but they have to show that they're better. You know, I like Marcus Freeman's talk messaging in the post game, and his team better listen to it about, you know, we need to really just focus on improving. And I do think that's a good mindset for them to be in. If this is their mulligan, it came at the right time. It came against the right team, because those other, at least three out of those other four teams are better than Boston College.
Yeah, I think on the Loose Emoji board in the game thread today, there were multiple times people being like, why can't we just bludgeon this team like Indiana is doing to Maryland? And it's odd to see folks comparing Notre Dame to wanting to be like Indiana, but Indiana certainly handled its business. But it's had games where it maybe didn't win as dominantly. I mean, it started the season with Iowa. It started the season with only a 13-point win against Old Dominion. So it's not like they've been blowing away opponents the entire season. Now, obviously, certainly the last two games against UCLA and Maryland, they're taking care of business there. But Indiana isn't really probably a major concern for Notre Dame as it relates to the college football playoff. With it would be surprising at this point if Ohio State and Indiana don't end up in the playoff based on how they're playing and what's ahead of them. I think that Cincinnati loss is good. Notre Dame just needs to make sure that the Big 12 is only going to get one team, which is the most likely outcome. But there were some teams that needed to lose, and I thought Cincinnati was one of them to sort of help clear the deck there. When does the loss to Miami start looking bad for Notre Dame? Can it get to that point this season?
If they just tanked and just kind of the floor came out on them. I mean, this was, I think you might have pointed it out in the Mike Singer postgame show. It wasn't just that Miami lost. It was also that SMU won. It keeps SMU an unranked team in the hunt for the ACC title and getting into the ACC championship game. And if you're Notre Dame, you don't want to see a team like that win a title, because then maybe the other good teams in the conference are now in the at-large pool. Georgia Tech losing helps, right, especially if they lose to Georgia. You want parity at the top of these other conferences. That's the best case scenario. But again, when you're Notre Dame, then you're really banking on Texas A&M continuing to kind of carry that banner. And USC got a scare at Nebraska.
Yeah.
They finally won. I mean, the kryptonite is going over the Rockies for them. That was their second win, I think, in the last 14, and going to the Eastern or Central time zone. And they barely won that game, but they did win it. So that helps them a little bit. But like Boise got blown out by Fresno State. That doesn't help. NC State, I guess, beating Georgia Tech helps.
Yeah.
Because of the comparison there and so forth. But I think if Miami loses another game, it needs to be to Pittsburgh, and Notre Dame needs to beat Pittsburgh. Then there would be a comparison and saying, you know what, Notre Dame is an improving team. They would beat Miami if they play them again. They would have beat Miami had they played them sequentially in a different spot in their schedule, but they had to open with them with a young quarterback. Now look at them. I think maybe that's where you can explain it away, but Notre Dame needs Texas A&M to keep winning, to have that better strength of schedule and have that good loss.
Yeah, I think it's not just the Miami loss is not as strong, but it's also you're leaning that much more heavily on the Texas A&M loss potentially in holding up your resume. So we'll see how it all plays out. Plenty more chaos ahead. We appreciate everyone watching post-game takeaways. Check us out over on the Blue and Gold channel for the staff roundtable on Sunday. Hope everyone enjoys the extra hour of sleep. Make sure you set your clocks appropriately on Sunday. And we'll be back with While Never Sleeps on Monday night.